It is August 27th, 2019. This is episode 10 of Richetel Talk. I am your host, David Newton. Wow, 10 episodes. It's really hard to believe that we've already reached 10 episodes for this podcast. I feel like I've only done a few. I'm having so much fun doing it, and I hope you're having fun listening in on our episodes. But I'm really excited for this episode today because the week before Seafair, I went down to the Home Street Bank shop. There was quite a few teams there, but I got the chance to interview Bert Henderson, driver of the Spirit of Detroit racing team. And we talked about hydroplanes, his family, memories, and his history in this wonderful sport of hydroplane racing. I learned more of how involved he is. He's a driver, racer, builder, designer. He fixes boats, repairs boats. I think anything with hydroplanes, any size, he can do it. But most of all, I learned how nice of a guy he is. He's a great ambassador for the sport, which we need. And he's one of those drivers that will go the extra mile for any fan or person involved with the sport. All right. Hope you're comfortable. Sit back, relax, and welcome to Richetel Talk. Well, welcome to Richetel Talk. I'm sitting here at Hydroplanes Incorporated again, but I'm talking with Bert Henderson. Bert, how are you doing today?
Excellent. I'm in, hydroplane mecca right now. Like being here at the Bud/Home Street shop is pretty incredible.
Yeah. Is this your first time being here at this building?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So when I came in, Jamie Auld, who's my mentor from a boat builder standpoint, and when I first started racing, driving standpoint, been out here a lot and told me kind of what to expect, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. They've done a lot of great things here in this building.
Yep.
A lot of good history, a lot of cool stuff. All right. Well, for a lot of the fans out there that don't know much of your background, I know you're big into hydroplane racing. Could you tell us how you got started and kind of the journey you took to going all the way up to the Unlimited class?
Well, my parents, as a kid, took me to races like in Picton, Ontario. They had Unlimiteds there and of course, all the limited classes. And I was just hook, line, and sinker. Grew up around boats. Jamie Auld, who's a huge part of my boat racing career, building and driving-wise, good friends of my parents. And so I just kind of eased in there with Jamie and, started with him. And, it's just going to the races as a kid was just a dream of mine to be able to get to be part of it. And, I hooked up with a guy, Tom Utman, at Brockville, and crewed with him for a little bit, and then, got to build my own boat with Jamie, tuned out stock, and started my racing career in 96.
Okay.
And, won a couple championships in 2.5, and then Patrick Hayworth and I hooked up in 2001 and 5 liter, and Patrick was a big part of influencing me and my driving style in the 5 liter class. Okay. And, Patrick and I have been good friends for a long time. So,
great.
Working up into the 5 liter class, and then, in 2007 when Valleyfield Regatta wanted to get the Grand Prix class up and running again, built a couple of those, one for Jimmy Shane, and then one for myself. Hooked up with Jeff Richards, who then became a huge part of my driving and Grand Prix. He and I were partners, and he's been a big part of my getting to this point. And my driving and pushing me and whatnot. So, and then, of course, every driver's dream is to, make it to Unlimiteds. And that's a very, very short list. So to be able to, run with guys of the likes, Jimmy and Jimmy King. And, you look back just the history of it all.
Oh, yeah.
Of the racers that have raced in Unlimiteds, just incredible, to be at that level.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing I always think about is the talent pool is always so big, but there's only a few seats available. So I know you earned that seat. It's not like you won a lottery and that. Mm-hmm. Like you earned your right to be in the limited class.
Well, there's some people that got me here, like Pierce Williams, and Bill Osborne, talked to those guys a lot, I found that, when you have the right people behind you, when you have the right people around you, and then, you know, you get, because you know, it's a lot of who you know, and, you know, your name and your, you know, the success you've had has something to do with it, but, you know, also the people that get you there, you have to give them credit as well.
Oh, definitely. But I know you've impressed a lot of people this year with your driving talents. I first saw you, I wasn't able to go Eastern Swing, but I saw you driving in Tri-Cities, and there were some things I noticed you did that was pretty impressive. I'm really a big fan of the pre-race shenanigans. It's like the milling period, and mm-hmm. I saw a couple moves you did that was pretty cool. One move I saw in, like, I think the third or fourth round, you're one of the front stretch. There's people ahead of you going, and it looked like you're going to follow them around, but you cut the last second and dart over, get lane one. So
yeah.
Just want to say I'm impressed with your driving skills I've seen so far, and I know a lot of other people are. So.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I mean, yeah. I, you know, having a good radio person is critical too.
Oh, definitely.
And Patrick, the one good thing with him is he puts himself in the seat with you. So, yeah. You know, I give as much credit due, you know, for the guys that get me there, you know, like yeah. with Patrick and being my eyes on the course and, you know, telling me who's around me and doing all of our timing runs. And, you know, we rehearse, we have plan A, plan B, plan C, you know, for situations that come up. So it's like, yeah. it's awesome to have somebody, you know, as a partner. And I consider that a partner.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge part of your racing, program mm-hmm. period. Well, how did you get started with the Spirit of Detroit race team and with Dave Bartosz?
Back, we were in Waterford, Michigan. Dave approached me, you know, we started talking about, you know, the possibilities of, you know, me going into the Unlimited, and he told me about the U2 and what he wanted to do with it, and we stayed in touch for a couple of years, and then, you know, a couple of years ago, he pulled the plug and said, or not pulled the plug, but he pulled the trigger and was mm-hmm. like, well, let's do this. We'll bring the U2 up and, you know, do the changes. And we made the changes to that boat. And then, you know, once he bought the 7, you know, it was always, you know, I was going to be driving whether it was the 2 or the 7. But when mm-hmm. the 7 came up, you know, it was a little bit more ready. But, yeah, I mean, Dave, I got to thank him for, you know, giving me the opportunity to do this. And of course, the team. But, yeah, like when we started out with the 2, you know, and obviously with the building part and the modifying, mm-hmm. you know, we were able to do a lot there leading up to, you know, learning a whole bunch more about how the Unlimiteds work and whatnot, you know, and the stuff that we did to the 2. And mm-hmm. yeah, sorry, I got a little bit off track there, but yeah.
That's all right. I could talk about hydroplanes all day.
Yeah, so. Me too.
Well, I know last weekend was your first time racing in Tri-Cities. What impressions did you have of the race course, the conditions, setup, the fan base that's over there?
It's incredible. You know, like I would, you know, from my perspective, you know, would put that at the level of Valleyfield Regatta, you know, with the fans that are there, the how educated the fans are in boat racing. They know boat racing, and, you know, the course is incredible. You know, the people are incredible. The city is incredible, how much they get behind it.
Yeah.
You know, and I know what it's like from a promoter standpoint, you know, with my hometown in Brockville. And, you know, they really get behind that race. And,
yeah.
you know, it is awesome. You know, every race that I've been to this year, Guntersville was my first time. Awesome. Madison was incredible. Just everything. And it's just, yeah. it's blown me away just how awesome this series is.
Yeah.
And, you know, like just... The people are awesome. The fan base is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just having a blast.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some diehard fans out there, right?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, there are. And I've, you know, went down into the area and met a few of the vendors and mm-hmm. a few of the people that were partying it up. And they have fun, for sure. And what a spot. What a spot.
Yeah, it's a great place for a fan to watch a race.
Yeah.
Great place. Well, talk about Valleyfield. I've never been to a Valleyfield race before, but I've heard so many great things. I really want to go there. Could you tell me a bit more about that race, about the fans, the racing? What is it like to be racing there?
Valleyfield is an incredible place. You know, there's so much history there. You know, they've been, I think this was their 81st year, 82nd year of mm-hmm. doing this, and they are so passionate about their fan base. You know, it's such a... You know, they have everything for kids. They have stuff, concerts. you know, in the racing, it's like a bowl.
Okay.
So that they're, you know, fans on both sides, you know, of the back stretch and the front stretch. Yeah. You know, there's tens of thousands of people there. It's, you know, it's similar to what Tri-Cities is, you know, where you have it on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the fans are similar. It's a big party, you know, with the camping and all of the vendors and all the stuff that goes on there. So, you know, if you've been to Tri-Cities, you expect the same at Valley Field. Okay. It's they're just two incredible places.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I have to make it out there next year to witness this. I just hear nothing but great things. So, you think they're gonna bring an Unlimited there anytime soon?
It would be awesome to have an Unlimited back there. You know, at least for a demonstration.
Yeah.
You know, I know that things got a little hairy there with when Vilwalk ended up on shore. But you know, it's such a cool venue to be at. You know, they don't have the room, you know, stack Unlimiteds, you know, 3-4 wide, but certainly it's an incredible spot to race.
Well, fantastic. Well, you've been around hydroplane racing for a long time. You've been a fan for it for a while. What are some memories that you want to share, maybe early memories that stuck with you and you kind of cherish about the sport?
As far back as, you know, like for me being just a little kid, you know, Brockville has had boat racing going on in every decade since the 1940s. You know, it's such an important part of, you know, like with the races going on there, but the fact that it's a boating community, you know, we're right in the heart of the Thousand Islands. So, you know, that's a big part, you know, of, you know, boat racing has been going on in the Thousand Islands area, and the names that have come out of that area are pretty incredible. But, you know, back, you know, going to Picton with my parents, you know, my first time going to Valley Field, you know, just Littleton, New Hampshire. There was a good family friend, Cal Jakes, that took me there when I was 12 years old, and I got to go in one of the little Cubs. And, you know, just, it's been ingrained in me, you know, to be part of it. And, you know, with the race shop, you know, when I went to work with Jamie, you know, like he worked for Bernie for a number of years and is really close with Ronnie Brown and whatnot. So it just kind of went into, you know, boat racing more as a hobby. But then, you know, when I started working with Jamie and started getting paid to do it, it was kind of cool. And then Jamie started, you know, settling back a little bit and I sort of picked it up. And so now it's just, when I think back to the memories, there's so many memories that I have, you know, even up to today. You know, it's just, it's such an important part of my life, my family's little life.
Yeah.
You know, my brothers both race, my son races.
Oh, wow.
So it's a kind of a, in the Henderson family,
yeah,
for
it's
sure.
It's a total family thing, right?
Yeah, the part that kind of stinks about it is that, you know, my son, when he races, you know, his first race in a 2.5 stock was in Brockville, our hometown race, and I was in Guntersville.
Oh.
So I missed that. And then, you know, this past weekend he was in Cambridge, Maryland. We were in Tri-Cities, but you know, like it's a boat racing family. So Owen works in the shop, and you know, and his first boat race, he was 4 days old. So so it's a family thing for sure,
definitely.
And it goes back for him. It goes back for me. You know, my brothers and all that stuff. So
Well, it's definitely a common theme around the sport. There's a lot of families that do this together. It's a great way to bond with your families and spend kind of a vacation together at the boat races.
It is, and it's like an extended family. And you know, like when they talk about a community raising your kids, and that's what the boat racing community does. And there's always eyes open, and you know, it's not like your kids are wondering what they're doing. You know, you're there, and it's such a great family sport when you're doing stuff together as a family.
Yeah,
you know, you couldn't be more proud of, you know, being able to do that. And you know, with my parents, you know, with it's hard on my mother, you know, with my all three of her sons doing it and her grandson, you know, but, you know, we're all doing it together, and that's what's so important.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. My father's been gone for some time now, but we were big into hydroplanes together. And a lot of my favorite memories are us doing things at the races. So that's fun that you can share that with your family.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's so cool that, you know, that you can actually do that, you know, as a family and enjoy it as a family.
Yeah. Well, I know you got a shop up there in Canada, and you build boats, you design boats, you repair boats. But is that your day job? Is that what you do for a living?
Yep. You know, it's my company's Henderson Hydroplanes, and you know, I officially went into business in the year 2000, but I started with Jamie, you know, back in the early 90s. And but yeah, this is from 2001 when I went to start to do it actually full time, quitting my day job and started doing this, and been doing it ever since. You know, it's even with the recession, you know, we were able to keep things going, and you know, it's a blast. You know, we've got some great guys in the shop. You know, I got a shout out to Ralph Matice and of course Jamie Auld, and you know, I have a guy in the machine shop, Charlie Comber, that they're a big part of the company. So
cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's living a dream for a lot of people out there, to be able to do what you love for your job and enjoy that every day.
Well, it was, you know, for me, that was a dream as a kid growing up, to be able to own my own race boat shop. Yeah. And, you know, you work hard, you know, like it took a lot of time and a lot of effort to get yourself out there, you know, going to the races. And then, you know, fortunately for me, you know, for driving, you know, I was able to, you know, collaborate with Jamie and, you know, making some changes and doing the things that we wanted to see how it developed into something better. And, you know, we've been pretty fortunate that way to be able to get it so that we can develop every year something different. Yeah. And, you know, when you can do that into your own stuff and then put it into your production stuff.
Yeah.
You know, yep, it's hard to stay on top, and, you know, you're always have everybody behind you doing it. And fortunately, for me, it's been a pretty good ride, but, you know, for the sport, you know, there's not a lot of people doing it. So, yeah. You know, it's a lot of work and a lot of dedication, a lot of money, but, you know, when you have a passion like that to be able to do it and call it your day job,
yeah,
you know, it's very cool.
Yeah. Well, you have a kind of a unique spot there. You're a driver, you're a racer, but you're also on the building aspect. So I know a lot of that comes very useful, knowing the boats and all that. You also design a lot of things. So are there things that are on your mind or on the drawing table you want to do and pursue in one of the classes that you build or race that you think right now would be kind of the next step for you?
Mm-hmm.
It seems, at least in the limiteds, from a fan's perspective, you look at the boats now and you can't see a big jump in the design. I mean, I know there's a lot of things that are going on that are smaller that add up, but visually you can't see them. Like, what's on your mind? What secrets can you share?
We've, like, with the Grand Prix in 2010, we, you know, completely redesigned the whole thing. You know, new sponsons, which worked out extremely well. And then we put that into the 350 class and 5-liter class. That's worked out extremely well. You know, when we did, you know, with the 350 class, we did everything. The cockpit, center section, cowling molds, sponsor molds, like everything was completely redone. In the Grand Prix, we did, you know, the sponsons. You know, there's a lot of little things that we've changed in the Grand Prix class. We recently did the 2.5 stock class. There's some more things that I want to do in that, but, you know, there's some things that I've got up my sleeve that I really want to try, and I think it would work in the unlimited class too.
Yeah.
You know, with the wings and canards and whatnot that, you might see in an unlimited, but for sure you're going to see in in one of the limited classes, you're going to see some changes in that, some pretty trick stuff.
Yeah.
And so, I think that it's going to work. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, making it happen. And, you know, the same thing with the turn fins. We've got some things that we've tried that's worked out really well. So, you know, it's progression.
Yeah.
And so keeping the progression going, you know, is important. And then that's what brings, you know, the customer base back to you.
Yeah.
Where you're making changes, and if they want to compete, then they got to step up.
Yeah.
And so that's the whole point, and not keeping the status quo, but, you know, seeing that, okay, well, this guy's doing this and it's working, you know, we're going to have to update or upgrade our stuff. And, you know, you put out a good product, you know, and you put out a successful one, then, you know, hope that people are going to come and buy some.
Well, if you're beating them, they're going to do something to beat you or back to you.
Yeah, that was the big thing, you know, in driving. You know, in getting accurate feedback is really hard, you know. And computer systems are really helping in making changes, but getting good, accurate feedback from the driver is a critical thing. And, you know, so for, you know, when Jamie and I talk, You know, we collaborate a lot. We're collaborating daily, you know, and especially in the shop that, you know, coming up with ideas to try new things. And we'll generally do that on one of our own stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, anybody that wants to be a guinea pig, so to speak.
That's good. But the Grand Prix and the smaller classes, those are good test beds, though, for design changes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's much easier to do that than just stick something on the Limited.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot cheaper that way, for sure. But, you know, when you see it consistently from the smaller classes work its way up, you know, there's some smaller intricacies that you have to change. But, mm-hmm. you know, the general, you know, what we're doing generally is, you know, when you as you go up, you know, and it continues to work and you're seeing it work, mm-hmm. that you can integrate it into the Unlimited. I'd love to be able to build an Unlimited. I mean, we've done some sketches and whatnot, and on doing some, and we've had a couple of inquiries, but you know, money talks.
Oh yeah. Over the years I've seen a lot of great concepts and designs, but never gets that dollar amount, you know, so hopefully we'll get some more business for you and you can build a couple. That'd be great.
Yeah, well, that's you know, we've got some ideas what we're going to do with the 7, so yeah. You know, what we've done to the 2 I think is going to work really well.
Nice.
You know, hopefully we'll see that out next year.
That'd be great.
And the 7, you know, I've got some things up our sleeves there. So,
okay.
You know, certainly expect, you know, if Dave does what we're talking about doing, expect some bigger things with the team Spirit of Detroit next year.
Okay. Well, let's talk more about that. I know Dave, he's got, last time I counted, he has 6 hydroplanes,
mm-hmm.
at least H1 current mm-hmm. hydroplanes in the shop. I don't know how many vintage boats he still has.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. It's good. I know he has talked about the 7, which you're currently racing now,
mm-hmm.
the Old Trend West U2, which you've mm-hmm. worked on. He owns a T3 now,
mm-hmm.
as well as the U57, mm-hmm. which Mark Evans drove last.
Yeah.
And the U22,
yeah.
which the Webster's own.
Yep. Yeah.
And then he also has, originally was the 1987 Miller American, which I'm sure none of the pieces are on there anymore, but it was mm-hmm. the Smoke and Joe's and the last Spirit of Detroit, yellow and green one.
Yep.
So that's 6. Is there another one hiding in there?
Well, he's got the first successful turbine, the Pan Pack, and that boat is intact.
Yeah.
He's talked about a couple of things with that thing, but you know, I think that's down the list. The 13, that one has a special place in his heart.
Oh, yeah.
And, but, you know, with all the boats, yeah, I know that Dave would love to see somebody either lease one of the boats. Mm-hmm. You know, the Webster's boat's in spectacular condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's all but ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, it needs a gearbox. And, you know, like if somebody had a gearbox and a Lance Morris gearbox and an engine, plop it in and away you go.
Right.
The boat is, you know, the trailer, everything's complete. Okay. You know, the 57 would take a little bit of doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with what he's got, you know, and I know that he's put it out there. If anybody wanted to lease something, you know, they could go boat racing for something rather, you know, relatively speaking, inexpensive.
Yeah, yeah. Compared to starting from scratch or purchasing another piece mm-hmm. of equipment out there. Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, that 13 that does have a special place in its heart. His Gold Cup victory came from that.
Yep.
His very first race as an owner.
Yeah.
My father and I crewed on there for a season. It was a pretty cool deal.
That's cool.
It was a fun year.
Yeah, and the boat. I mean, it's got a lot of potential. It needs some modifying. There's a couple of things that need some attention to it. But I think it would be competitive, especially, you know, it's not heavy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just getting the right pieces and components in there, and making sure the boat was properly balanced.
Right.
That I think it would be competitive.
Yeah, take some time and
be
a front runner. Well, what about the T3? I've heard some interest from Patrick, hoping to drive that one. Is that going to see the water anytime soon?
You know, we're working on it. Unfortunately, you know, for Seattle and Tri-Cities, it won't be there. But, you know, that boat is getting close.
Yeah.
Patrick's very, very keen to wanting to get in the water. Yeah. And, you know, and I know that he's had some fun with the T5.
Yeah.
You know, it's great having him on board. You know, I'm not sure what's going to happen for next season, whether it's going to be the 7 or the 2 or the 7 and the 10 or what combination we're going to, but, you know, all 3 boats, I think, are going to be the 3 of the priority.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Yeah. Well, I just gotta know, what's your favorite part of racing hydroplanes?
The people.
People?
Yep. Like, some of my closest friends are boat racers, and, you know, it's when they talk about it being an extended family, it truly is. You know, the fans are incredible. The people are incredible.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, some of my friends are my closest are boat racers. So,
yeah.
You know, and when you see your children, the friendships that they make, you know, it just increases that, you know, so that is my favorite part. That's what keeps me coming back. Of course, there's the competition and the racing part of it, which I love too.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the people, you know, that make it so special.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another common thread to the whole racing community. I know for myself as a fan going to Tri-Cities, it's another, like, family reunion because you see friends that you only see once a year. I got friends that come from Canada up in Edmonton that make the drive all the way down there every year. I see them, see friends from Tri-Cities I don't see normally throughout the year. And, yeah, that's a great part of the sport. All right, well, I talked to Jeff Bernard. And I talked to Brian Perkins about this. I was thinking it'd be really cool if they had a theme song for all the racers as they enter the course. I don't know if you've ever been to, like, a Blue Jays game. That's probably the closest baseball team to you.
Yep.
One of the batters come out, they play a theme song. If you had time to think about this, what would your theme song be?
I know exactly what it would be.
What would it be?
It would be We Will Rock You.
We Will Rock You.
You know, that. Right. You know, as long as I've been going to Valley Field for the Grand Prix Final...
Yeah.
It starts out with the We Will Rock You song.
Okay. All right.
And we did this when we were in Madison, all those drivers that did our little lip sync thing to it. I mean, it's such an awesome song. It gets your just heart pumping.
Yeah.
And you know, when you know, it's like the, you know, the stomping and the clap and the stomping and the clap. It's just it just makes me just go like I want to go.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. Yeah, that's my number one.
All right. Well, I got to figure out who I can talk to about this. Maybe get this going for Seafair or something.
Oh,
that'd be pretty cool.
That would be awesome. You know, it's it would rev the fans up. You know, it just revs you up. It's such an awesome song.
It is.
And then
is.
The other thing that I enjoy, you know, when they play We Will Rock You, at the end, they generally will come on and they'll start We Are the Champions.
Yeah.
And then in Valley Field, when they do the trophy presentation for the Grand Prix, it's We Are the Champions.
Okay.
So it kind of like sort of part and parcel, you know, when you start the race out with We Will Rock You, and then you've got your champion at the end of the final.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that'll kind of rile everyone up.
Yeah.
We could hear that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Man, well, keep talking about Valleyfield. I gotta make it out there next year for this. All right, well... My friends and I, my wife and I, we always like to play, like, what-if scenarios. Like, what if you win the lottery? What if this happens? So I got to ask a what-if question to you. But say Patrick can't be your radio guy for Seafair, and you need a new spotter, and all H1 can give you is the choice between Kevin Hart, Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Gilbert Godfrey. Who would you pick to be on your radio?
Arnold. Because if I screwed up, I'd be terrified. Like... Get your butt in gear, buddy. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd push you, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would definitely push you. And like, he'd be like, you know what, if I will break you if you don't. Yeah, it would be Arnold all the way.
Yeah, all right. Well, come see for a Sunday. We'll see what happens, right? But, no, I'm glad you have Patrick as your radio guy. It sounds like you have a really, really good relationship.
Yeah, we definitely gel. And, you know, like, we have a lot of the same qualities in our driving. And, I mean, like, when we were looking at our data, you know, when Patrick drove versus when I drove, I mean, you would swear to God that it was the same person driving.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That is really interesting to look at the data for that and the different drivers. So, well, that's really cool that you're so similar.
Yep.
All right. Well, now that you've had some experiences racing Unlimited, so I believe this is your third year in Unlimiteds, right?
Because
you had 2 years ago, you're in the Detroit unfortunate accident, which I'm so glad that you were safe with that. I was watching that live, and that was some scary.
Yeah,
that was really, really scary. But you got the boat rebuilt and fixed and came back last year, and now you're full season this year. So you've got some time under the Unlimiteds class. But what differences from Grand Prix racing to Unlimiteds racing have you noticed?
It's like apples to oranges. You know, that there's the only similarity is that it's a hydroplane with a front wing on it. You know, like the Unlimiteds are so big and they're fast, and you got to drive the boat with the wing. I mean, you know, it's, you know, there's so much going on, you know, with the fuel and the N2 and, you know, driving with the lights, you know, It's there's a lot. With a Grand Prix boat, it's like instant power. Okay. We race on such smaller courses.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to drive. You drive the boat with your canard, but you also got to drive it with your foot.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so much torque and acceleration there. So it's, you know, there's, you know, it's when you get into a Grand Prix boat from a smaller boat, it's like learning how to drive again. And then when you get into an unlimited, there's so much differences that you're learning how to drive again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like one thing else, Jeff, you know, he was a big part of when I got into unlimited, Jeff Bernard, that, you know, he told me a lot, taught me a lot. You mm-hmm. know, when he did my radios the two times in Detroit,
yeah,
you know, it was pretty cool having Jeff there. And, you know, he's a pretty smart driver and he's a very good driver. And, and that's where it's, you know, associating yourself with good people and people that know what they're doing on the course. And so, you know, I'll certainly give Jeff credit where that is. But as far as, you know, the differences between the two, I couldn't even say that I would prefer, because both are awesome. You know, I love a Grand Prix boat. I love the power of a Grand Prix boat, you know, and they're a challenge to drive. And I love an unlimited, and the challenges, the different challenges of driving an unlimited are, and that's what's so cool about it,
mm-hmm.
are the differences.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're still learning, you never stop learning, but I mean, when you're learning so much more,
yeah.
it just, I think it, from your driving perspective and your abilities, it just makes you that much sharper.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. How hard would it be for you if you raced on the same weekend at Grand Prix and an Unlimited? Because there's some drivers out there that do that. Jamie Nielsen did that last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
How hard would that be for you to jump back and forth between those seats?
I did that 2 years ago in Detroit.
Oh, did you really?
With the Steeler and the 7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, literally you got out of one, and then there was a golf cart waiting for you to take you back down to the other pit and to get in the other one. It was exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, when you're, and especially in Detroit, you know, being that rooster tail turn, you know, there's, it's a challenging course. So, and you have to adapt quickly, you know, when you get out of one and then you get to another, mm-hmm. you know, like, you got to really be sharp.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it's a challenge then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we go and you get back to working on the 7, is there any other things you want the fans to know, or about yourself, or about your life or racing career?
Well, I'm a family man, love my family, love my family, and then love my wife, like everybody that's to be without that, it's not worth it, you know, like, you know, and then the other thing are the fans and the people, the volunteers for the race sites, the people that put on the events,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, without them, you know, we wouldn't be here. And so, you know, just so appreciate everything that everybody does to make this sport what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, and I want people to know that, you know, if you see me, don't be afraid to come up and say hi, or, you know, whatever. I mean, like, that's what I'm here for. And, you know, if I look like I'm busy, well, chances are I'm probably not too busy unless I'm driving.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 'cause the crew, they do such a great job that, you know, my part of my job on the team is, you know, talking to the fans and talking to the people and, you know, helping any way that I can. So,
Well, I know the fans appreciate drivers that are like that, and they're very upfront and available to the fans to talk to. So,
without the fans, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, you might be one of the new popular drivers in the series now.
Well, like I said, you know, you see me, come say hi, and, you know, like, that's what I'm here for.
All right. Well, really excited to see you racing at Seafair. This will be your first time in Seattle on Lake Washington, correct?
Woo. Looking forward to it.
Yeah,
pumped.
All right. So hopefully we'll see Bonito Holmes on the podium. You made some good podium finishes in the first two races. I was hoping you got would get that third place last weekend, but
Jeff pushed me out into Boonie Land.
I think we might see a better finish in Seattle for you.
Yeah, we're working hard there this week, and you know, doing some changes to the boat that we hope is going to work out. So we'll be ready.
All right. Fantastic.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you, Bert. Appreciate it. Yep. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed our 10th episode and the interview with Bert Henderson. I had a lot of fun talking with him, being down at the Home Street Shop, and just learning more about his rich history in the sport. I think a lot of the West Coast fans, West Coast hydroplane racers, we don't get to learn as much about the rich history that's in the other side of the States, other side of Canada. And I'm looking forward to learning more about Grand Prix, the wonderful organization they have over there, and racing in Valleyfield and around the United States. But I also look forward to checking in with him this winter. I hope to contact him, see what's going on in his shop, see what projects he's doing, and what we can look forward to seeing next year. Make sure you check back next week, as our episode will be released Tuesday, September 3rd at 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Also, don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your podcast player, as well as rate and review your experience. For more updates and Hydra news, check us out on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ruchertel Talk is now online as well with our website, www.ruchertel-talk.com. On the website, you can sign up for an email subscription list to get notifications on upcoming episodes, Hydra news, podcast updates, and much more. Finally, this is a free podcast to all of our listeners, but if you're really enjoying Ruchertel Talk and want to help us to continue to grow and expand, please donate. You can find the link to donate through PayPal on our website under the support tab. So until next time, I hope to see you at the races.